We have a free digital education series coming up. Now, this isn't going to be for all of you, by the way. This isn't something that is going to be exciting for a lot of you. But for many of you, it really, truly can be life-changing. It is a webinar series that is coming up tomorrow and June 4th. We're inviting our clients and businesses here in the Ozark to join the free digital education series. There are many questions how to best use digital advertising to increase profitability, and these seven separate webinars are going to answer those questions. And it will also help you determine which digital strategy makes most sense for your business and so forth. A lot of people think that the extent of digital marketing is using Facebook. Or maybe buying a Google ad or something. And it is so much more than that. It's not something I have any expertise in at all. So I would be the sort of person, if I managed a business or managed marketing for a business or owned a business, would benefit from greatly. So this is a free thing. All you have to do is just go get signed up, and you can get all of that information and get registered at ksgf.com. And it's free, once again. We are going to chat with Mr. D. Wampler in just moments. Don Luzader first with the latest news update.
And good morning. Police say a man who fired two shots outside a friend's karaoke on West Battlefield in Springfield overnight is now in the hospital after crashing his van across the street while trying to get away. No one else was hurt and when those shots were fired. The grandmother of Nathan Sneed, an inmate who escaped from the Greene County Jail Monday night, needed surgery and staples to fix a wound she suffered after a canine from the sheriff's office attacked her. Sheriff Jim Arnott says it's the first time one of his canines ever bit an innocent person and says we're trying to take care of any issues that we have. It's one of those situations that's very unfortunate. The grandmother led deputies and the canine into her home after authorities were concerned that Sneed would show up after his escape. And a man from Marionville has been charged with second-degree murder. Authorities say James Pride stabbed Patricia Urange to death in a car on Memorial Day there in the Marionville area. Court records say Pride stabbed Urange because he says she was evil. Pride was denied bond in a hearing on Tuesday. And that is the latest news.
The KTTS First Alert Forecast, sponsored by Anchor Tactical Supply, a 50% chance of showers, thunderstorms today. Still fog out there. In fact, it seemed to burn off for a bit, but it's certainly thick here around the station. A high of 75 for the day. Cloudy with a chance of showers, storms tonight, low of 60. Showers, possibly a thunderstorm with 75 for the high on Thursday, and mostly sunny Friday with a high of 76, 62, and fog right now. Mr. D. Wampler is with us from your office, I assume. You and Mr. Stop and Frisky, or is it a Mr. or Mrs., or is just your cat's name Stop and Frisky? You think I'd
remember? It's a Mrs. It's a Mrs., and she waits for me every morning at about 6 a.m. and comes out of the bushes somewhere and gets a $1.05 can of cat food.
You know what I – and I actually have a similar morning experience that whenever I get up in the morning and open the bedroom door, our cat is waiting for me because – now, not a can of cat food, but we get cans of tuna for usually anywhere from 68 to 74 cents, and I'll feed her half a can of tuna in the morning, and she loves it. Loves it. So she's all, I understand, I've got my own little cat experience every morning.
So are you only feeding her half of a can?
Well, she has regular dry food as well that sets out, but that's something that she gets in the morning. My mother-in-law started that when we were on one of the great escapes, and she was house-sitting for us and babysitting, and we get back. She said, oh, by the way, I've been feeding your cat tuna in the morning. Well, then my wife's like, well, we can't stop now, you know, because cats rule the world and will turn on us if we didn't continue to do so. And so that's, yeah, every morning. But it's cheaper usually than buying canned cat food, and I figure it can't be less healthy. I mean, it's just straight-up tuna. She loves it.
Yeah, I feel a little silly out there at 6 in the morning telling a kitty that I love it and visiting with it and
nothing
talking
wrong.
Baby talk to it.
No, nothing wrong with that at all.
Well, as long as I try not to be too loud. I don't want the neighbors to hear me talking to
like,
the cat.
Boy, old D, he just starting to worry about him. especially if their view, like if they're watching over shrubs or something and they don't even know there's a cat there. They think you're just wandering around, shuffling through the parking lot, talking to yourself.
That cat can come over a 12 or 15 foot wooden fence. I've never seen anything like it.
Oh yeah,
and land on all fours and come running over. And then it gets up on my car. I have a car that's about 10 years old, and I think it's got some claw scratches on it. But it gets on my hood because it's warm, and sits on my hood the rest of the morning. So if I leave to go to court, I have to be careful that the cat is not on top of my car.
Or in your wheel well.
Yeah, if you see me driving down the street in a black car with a gray kitty on top, well,
honk.
Sure, honk.
So what is going on? Hey, there was something I wanted to ask you about, and it's the I know you've been following this, of course, I'm sure, the judge who has presided over this fiasco with Flynn and the Department of Justice dropping the charges, and the judge just like, well, I don't know. And they're like, hey, you don't have a choice. This isn't your decision. I mean, everyone's saying this is not your decision. And then a couple days ago, the news that he has hired an attorney as a judge, and this has a lot of people scratching their heads. What does this mean? I mean, as best as you could tell.
It's ridiculous. They don't have enough to do. The charge decision is in the hands of the prosecuting attorney. And in this case, the U.S. attorney, and they're the ones that make the decision. And I don't think the court has any choice in it at all. They need to move on. I mean, they've got a lot of other cases they're working on, and lawyers just tend to delay things and drag things on. Sometimes it's hard for lawyers and judges to make a decision about things, and I mean, there's so many other cases. I'm sure
right.
There are litigants in that judge's courtroom that are waiting for their cases to be heard. And, you know, it's just dragging it on. I think they want to drag it on until November.
You think that's what it is?
Tainted by politics. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, let me ask. I've heard it references. Well, that judge, that's a sign that he thinks he's in trouble. Now, does that mean from a legal position or speculation that he's doing something that he should not be doing from the bench and he knows it and that he could personally be in trouble for it?
No, I mean, as far as I know, he's not in any kind of trouble. I mean, there was a plea of guilty twice by General Flynn, and it was in violation of, as we discussed some years ago, back in the 1960s, Brady versus Maryland. I know we talked about this on the program, I think 2 weeks ago, that the prosecuting attorneys, the U.S. attorneys, did not disclose some of the emails of the FBI agents that were doing the 302s or their reports. Yeah. And when a plea of guilty is entered, it has to be voluntarily and intelligently done with full knowledge of the facts that the government has to prosecute. It's the U.S. Supreme Court ruled the case of Brady versus Maryland. This is a Brady violation, and the U.S. attorneys withheld this information that they were out to get Flynn and out to fire him. And in that situation, the plea of guilty is not an open, voluntary, intelligent plea of guilty.
Right.
And it should be set aside by the judge. A judge should be lecturing the U.S. attorneys that were handling this and dismiss the case and move on, close the file out and go on, and then let the public decide next November, you know, who's right and who's wrong.
We've got Dee Wampler with us. We're going to get a traffic update as the fog is thick this morning, and we'll continue on with Mr. Wampler in just moments. Here is Parker with that traffic. I'm Nick Reed, Springfield's Talk, 104.1. And a reminder today, Big Cedar Lodge is hosting a career fair from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at their Grandview Conference Center. They are offering healthcare benefits, paid time off, unlimited growth opportunities. If you do want more information about that job fair today from 10 to 2 at the Grandview Conference Center, Big Cedar Lodge, find the contact info at bigcedar.com/careers. Dee Wampler is with us this morning.
I've got some legal issues that
Excellent.
I wanted to make your listeners aware of. In Louisville, Kentucky last week, there was a black man and woman that were asleep in their bed, and the cops came in with a no-knock search warrant because supposedly the lady who worked at the hospital was sending out some drugs illegally to various people. Anyway, they got a search warrant and came in on what we call a no-knock search warrant. And in the process, the man that she was sleeping with was shot and killed by the police officers. And the reason I'm mentioning this, of course, is another black shooting. So you're going to be hearing about this in the media. Back 30 or 40 years ago, we probably only had 1,000 or so no-knock search warrants. So under the Fourth Amendment, the cases that have decided it is that the government is prohibited from an unreasonable search and seizure. But the cases say that if the cops feel that there's going to be danger, they can do what we call a no-knock warrant where they don't have to knock and announce who they are. Okay, and so the SWAT team goes in with a no-knock search warrant, and then a shooting occurs. And there are about 60,000 no-knock warrants issued now yearly in America. I just wanted to say this is an interesting case to watch because eventually the U.S. Supreme Court will probably visit this again. Anyway, that's my little dissertation on the no-knock search warrants, which are dangerous to serve.
Yeah, I would think so. You would almost, and I know it varies by instance, and I understand the instinct of law enforcement and think, well, we got to get the jump on them. We don't want them to know that we're coming. But at the same time, I don't know, it seems as if you could potentially make it more dangerous. And I guess, but the danger shifts, arguably, from law enforcement to the individuals who could potentially be innocent or an innocent bystander. It sounds like he wasn't even the subject of the search in this case. Because I can't imagine if I, in the middle of the night, I'm, you know, asleep and all of a sudden people come storming into my home and, yeah, I mean, they're yelling police, but, you know, depending, if you live a lifestyle of crime, you may very well think, yeah, right, this is the police, you know, and your instinct is just to fight back. And boy, there could be a bit of irony there where you actually create a deadly situation instead of avoiding one.
Yeah, and the second big case right now, of course, is Ahmaud Arbery, who's a 25-year-old black man that was jogging in Macon, Georgia. And there's all kinds of legal things there. First of all, vigilantism, because the now the three white men have been charged. The father, I think, that was a former police officer, had a shotgun who fired the shot. And then he was with his son, who was 30-year-old son. And then there was another white man that was following them in a vehicle that was filming it. And but for the fact that of that film, we might not know for sure exactly what happened. So on the one hand, the man that was filming it should be given an award. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, now he's been charged with murder. Right. So now we have the Stand Your Ground law, which is what Georgia has. So the black jogger that was going through, he had a right to stand his ground, which is, you know, kind of a different way of looking at it. And then we have the felony murder rule. So they're saying the son and the man that was doing the filming, they were involved in a crime that is following and maybe getting ready to assault the black jogger. And if a death occurs in the commission of a felony, which is kind of a stretch here, then you can be charged with murder. Okay, so then we get into conspiracy. So there's all kinds of laws here. In a conspiracy, the act of one is the act of all. So if you're the lookout man and another friend of yours goes in and robs a store and kills the cashier, you can get charged with murder because you were the lookout. And but for that, maybe the crime would have never occurred. So we got conspiracy, we got felony murder, we got stand your ground, and not to mention citizen's arrest. Of course, these two white guys that were actually involved in the shooting, they're going to claim that they were going to make a citizen's arrest. Right. And you got to be real careful making a citizen's arrest, because a felony has to have been committed, normally some sort of crime of violence. And it's you can get into a lot of trouble.
Well, when it comes to charging the person who films it, the number one lesson I learned from, and I serious, if I ever happen to catch any sort of crime on tape, I'm keeping my mouth shut, because I do not want, you know, I do not want to get involved, especially if there's a chance I can get charged with not intervening, or, you know, even further charged with the crime because I stood and I filmed it. But I can't tell you how many, just on YouTube, you can pull up videos. You see it in the inner city all the time. And there was one that made headlines last week, this 13 or 14 year old girl, I think it was in New York City, a bunch of other youths, boys, beat her down for her tennis shoes. And that was filmed by a whole bunch of them. And they put it on YouTube and everywhere else. I mean, those sorts of videos are all over YouTube. Are we going to start tracking down these inner city teens that film these beatdowns and charge them with the crime? I suspect we're not. But, you know, I suppose if it's good for one citizen, it ought to be good for the others. Just thoughts.
You still there?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's a lot of things that, but you're mentioning about if you view a crime or anything like that. Really, as a citizen, you know, you probably would have called Crime Stoppers or given some anonymous information if you saw a crime being committed. I mean,
I don't know. I would have a couple years ago, but it just depends. I would be worried that if people were like, well, why didn't you do anything? Why didn't you intervene? Maybe you should get charged because you could have intervened and you didn't. I don't know. I mean, yeah. You're probably right, but boy, I don't know.
Okay, I got a couple of other legal things. Yeah. Are you up against a break?
Yeah, let's do that. And we'll continue on here with D. Wampler in just about 2 minutes. I'm Nick Reed. And Mr. D. Wampler joins us. Continue on, good sir.
Well, there's a couple of other lawsuits going on. Apparently, the Ninth Circus, oops, I meant the Ninth Circuit, sorry, the most liberal circuit in America, has ruled in a Utah case that prisoners that want transgender surgery can get it free of charge, and the government will pay for it. So whether this case will go to the U.S. Supreme Court or not, I don't know. But if anyone wants transgender surgery, well, you can get yourself committed in federal court, and you can get free surgery. Moving on to something a little bit more fascinating, Johnson & Johnson baby powder is now gone. It's the most familiar scent in America. The smell of Johnson's baby powder since 1894. There are hundreds of millions of packages of baby powder sold, and the lawyers have driven it under. Johnson & Johnson has announced that, no pun intended, but they've taken a powder, if you will. They've withdrawn it from the shelves. The American Medical Association followed 250 million cases of baby powder over the last 11 years, and they didn't find one case where it had caused cancer. So, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's off the shelf now, and I guess the lawyers, you know, are always coming up with these things. The next thing for the lawyers is the coronavirus lawsuits.
Right. Yeah.
And again, no pun here, but they're salivating, if you will. They are going to be filing a lot of lawsuits that if somebody got it and got the virus, maybe it was because they went into a store and the store didn't provide adequate security or social distancing. And so there's going to be all kinds of civil lawsuits being filed by lawyers, and it's kind of unusual here because we thought this virus was going to be on hard surfaces.
Yeah.
And from what I can tell, the vast majority of it is through coughing and sneezing and spitting, which is the cause of it. And I guess that means Yadi Molina will not be spitting sunflower seeds anymore for the Cardinals.
Yeah, and I think that some of the rules, I believe I read, that they were either contemplating or that were put in place for Major League Baseball was that there was going to be no spitting.
Yeah.
I think I did
see
that.
And Vegas is opening up, but they're coming up with disinfected dice now, because every time the dice are thrown on a crap table, there's, you know, it's going to hit certain things, and people are going to be touching the dice, and that'll be an interesting lawsuit. I went to Las Vegas and got the virus by shooting craps.
Wow. Yeah. So, especially if you lost.
To file lawsuits really sting. Over
there. Do we have more time with you? Or
I'm going to be in court this morning, but I'm going to be on closed circuit television.
All right, so we do have more time with you then?
Yes.
So, okay, all right. Dee Wampler with us. We're going to get a news update here in a couple of moments. We'll continue on with Dee and then traffic kicking it off here. Parker Pageant. I'm Nick Reed. Springfield's Talk 104.1. Latest news update with Mr. Don Luzader.
Man from Marionville is facing second-degree murder charges after authorities say he stabbed a woman to death in her car. James Pride appeared in court Tuesday and was denied bond in connection with the death of Patricia Urange. Court documents say Pride stabbed Urange because he says she was evil. The grandmother of Nathan Sneed, an inmate who escaped from the Greene County Jail Monday night, says she was attacked by a deputy's canine as authorities searched her home. Casey Meredith says she had to have surgery on her arm to take care of a gash she suffered when a canine attacked her. Sheriff Jim Arnott says this is the first time one of his canines has bit an innocent person. The canine also bit its handler as the deputy tried to pry the dog off of Meredith's arm. And the Springfield Lasers, along with World Team Tennis, will play its 2020 season at a resort in West Virginia, playing 63 regular season matches from July 12th through the 30th. The league will allow up to 500 fans at those events, which is 20% capacity, to attend outdoor matches and will follow the direction of local and state government leaders. And that is the latest news.
The KTTS First Alert forecast, cloudy, 50% chance of showers, thunderstorms today, a high of 75. Tonight, cloudy, a chance of showers and storms, low of 60. Showers, possibly a thunderstorm tomorrow with a high of 75, and mostly sunny Friday, 76, 63 here at the KSGF studios. Don Carriker, who still has plots of parcels of acreage available out there, which is south of 60, just east of Rogersville, but it's not subdivision style. We're talking about secluded area, gravel roads, hills, valley woods, clearing, the sort of thing that is the picturesque Ozarks, the sort of thing this morning with the fog and the sun coming up that you just want to take a picture of and post on Facebook. That's where you could live. Homes have yet to be built. That's where you come in. You buy some of that acreage, you build yourself a home. Well, you've bought a home before, and you understand the concept of getting a home loan in order to buy a home, but to build one, that takes time. How does that work? Well, Don Carriker is the person to serve your needs there as well, of course, with IWantAGreatHomeLoan.com. It's much easier than you might anticipate. So you can live out, wake up, beautiful landscape all around you, build a home just to your liking, and do it all with IWantAGreatHomeLoan.com because you do. We've got Dee Wampler with us this morning. Hey, if we could go back, because I want to address something that can be confusing for people. You mentioned Johnson & Johnson baby powder, and it's done, it's over with, and that's largely because of civil lawsuits. But you mentioned that out of, I think, 250 million so that they tracked people who used this, they couldn't find any link to cancer or any other sort of disease. And so people may say, well, then how is it that people win lawsuits for something like that? And correct me if I'm wrong, but whenever somebody sues someone, you don't really have to prove anything beyond a reasonable doubt as opposed to a criminal situation. So you can have a company that gets sued and there's no proof that there's anything wrong with their product. But if it's a civil suit and you've got the jury and they're like, we think that you should have known better anyway, they can still get nailed for it. Is that correct way to present
it? It's a lower standard than beyond a reasonable doubt. Beyond a reasonable doubt is 12 out of 12 jurors on each and every issue in the case. And that's 99%. And so just a preponderance of the evidence is the standard in most civil cases, state and federal. So that's like 51%. So if you believe, 51% in a given situation that it caused cancer, that would be enough for a jury to assign negligence. And so that's what's happened is, there's some really very convincing trial lawyers that hire experts. You can get experts to just about testify to anything. And in a given situation, if a jury is swayed by sympathy or whatever, someone's suffering from cancer, well, they can they do a sit. And in addition to that, you got to keep in mind that Johnson & Johnson has to defend those lawsuits.
Right.
So they end up thinking, well, if we go to trial, we're probably going to win, but it's going to cost us $500,000 just to go to trial and win. And a lot of times then they'll offer money to settle the case. And the case never actually goes to trial, but the insurance company for Johnson & Johnson says, enough, take it off the market. We just can't afford any more lawsuits. So that's what's happened. So going back to this money that's being doled out, the Small Business Administration is checking a lot of these government checks that are going out, and there's going to be a lot of lawsuits. The government's already asking for money to be paid back to them. A lot of the money that was sent to large banks and large corporations, and we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars. And this Planned Parenthood got $80 million on this Paycheck Protection Program. So what I'm trying to figure out is, why did our government give $80 million to Planned Parenthood? Does this mean that they weren't performing abortions, or that the number of abortions were down over the last 2 or 3 months? Anyway, the Small Businesses Administration is already asking Planned Parenthood to return the money.
Yeah, good luck.
Don't hold your breath. But I'm not a fan of Planned Parenthood. Anyway, I'm not a fan of government money being given to Planned Parenthood. And now we have this. So now Pelosi has a new bill, Nick, and it has, I think it has 1,800 pages in it. I tried to find something on it and didn't have time to check it out, but there's all kinds of government money that's going to be doled out. It hasn't been passed yet, but it's 1,800 pages of handouts that are going to be given to various individuals, and more money probably to the arts and for building bridges and things like that. This money is supposed to go to people that have been suffering due to loss of wages. And so
it's going to be packed with stuff that has nothing to do with helping us get through or past the effects of the government mandates regarding coronavirus.
Yeah. There's a couple of other things I wanted to mention. I see Trump has shut down the flights from Brazil now. Of all the countries in the world, Brazil has the highest of this COVID-19 infection rate. And I'm sure he's going to be criticized.
Well, it's clearly racist.
It's clearly racist. And you'll remember the famous January 30th edict that he did, the executive order stopping people from coming in from communist China. And, of course, Biden and Pelosi called him racist and xenophobic. I'm not sure what a xenophobic person is, but
Trump.
They call him all kinds of names back on January 30th when he tried to shut it down. So a couple of other things. Over the holidays, I was glad to watch a lot of the World War II movies, and I recorded them D-Day, Midway, The Steel Helmet, The Pacific was one really good movie with actual films. And it's something to think about. 17, 18-year-old kids that gave their lives both in Europe and in the Pacific. And it's good to watch those movies. I was glad to record them, and I kind of watch them over and over again. And it's, you know, it should make us stop and think and be thankful for the country that we have, notwithstanding all of our problems. The young men and women that gave their lives over the years in the various wars. And so it was good to watch the movies. They always have them on Memorial Day.
You know what I think probably one of my favorite wartime movies is? That takes place here in the U.S. The movie Glory. Have you seen that?
Yeah. Yeah,
I just really like it. It's got an incredible cast. I mean, you've got Matthew Broderick, Denzel Washington, Morgan Freeman, Cary Elwes, just to name a few. And the musical score is fantastic, too. I remember that being shown to us in, I think it was ninth grade. I've just always really, really liked that film. I just thought it was great.
Yeah. Yeah, I had an uncle that, I had two uncles, one in Europe and one that fought on Guam. And so, you know, I couldn't believe that there was actually combat on Guam, but the Japanese did occupy that island for a while. Some years ago, we had a bank president in Springfield, Billy Cantrell. This is kind of before your time, Nick. And he eventually kind of retired from being a bank president, and he opened a chili parlor over on the 300 block of South National. He called it Billy's Chili. And it was a popular place to go in for lunch and have chili and visit with all kinds of people. Anyway, Billy had on the wall his Mae West vest. He was a fighter pilot, and he was shot down over the island of Peleliu. And, you know, I would just talk to him constantly about where is Peleliu? I've never heard of that. But I mean, it was a major battle. It was an island occupied by the Japanese, and it had the bullet hole in it where he'd been shot.
Wow.
And of course his plane went down and he was rescued. And, but you know, it's fascinating to talk with these people. I know Robert D. Rosendahl passed away a few months ago. He was a prisoner of war of the Japanese for over four years. He was in a forced labor camp. He was captured. He was in the Bataan Death March, and he died. He was almost 100 years old. And I was so fortunate to be able to talk with him and hear about his thoughts and his experiences and people like Billy Cantrell. You know, we don't want to forget those people and their sacrifice.
D. Wampler, it's always a pleasure. Hopefully we'll get you back in studio soon.
Looking forward to it. And thanks for having me on this morning.
Of course, my friend. Have a good rest of your day, all right?
Thank you.
You bet. D. Wampler, everyone. Traffic with Parker Padgett, and I'm Nick Reed. This is Springfield's Talk 104.1. It is not uncommon to find snippets of major networks or even not major networks like MSNBC in which their folks are caught being hypocritical. I mean, it's just such a daily occurrence. What doesn't happen so often is when they get called out for it and it is clear they recognize they've been caught. You know, generally, there are special circumstances in which this occurs. Now, if I'm an MSNBC host or an NBC host and I have somebody on that's I know is going to be in political opposition, and I can kind of talk over them and you are ready to weave and bob. But every so often a person's caught off guard. And that happened up in Wisconsin. I believe it was the Lake Geneva area. And what has happened, by the way, it's a beautiful area. Lake Geneva is just beautiful. And a lot of people really enjoy going there. Well, as you know, it's close, relatively close to the Illinois border. And the authoritarians in Illinois have, you know, shut everything down, threatening to throw churchgoers in prison and all this sort of stuff, while Wisconsin has been forced to open up. You know, the governor there tried to shut things down to a greater degree than they were, and the courts weighed in and said, you can't do that. You are exceeding your authority. So this caused a lot of places to open up. A lot of folks from Illinois have been going up to Lake Geneva and other areas of Wisconsin as well, so they can once again enjoy human rights. MSNBC's there. And let me tell you what the audio I'm going to play so you know what to expect here. Much of it is visual. You've got a guy, and he's wearing the mask, and he's up there just talking about, I mean, you would think it's a bunch of 8-year-olds handling poisonous snakes and loaded weapons while drunk. This is how they act when there are people not wearing masks. And so this requires MSNBC to dispatch a journalist up there to you know, wear a mask, of course, because you'd have to be crazy not to. And he's talking about people up here, they're not wearing masks. And he says, in fact, and he kind of motions over, and the camera guy pans over, and there's a guy wearing a Packer jersey who's filming MSNBC. And the MSNBC host, you'll hear him, he calls him out, and he's like, there's one right there. It's not wearing a mask. To which the guy wearing the Packers jersey says, yeah, like your cameraman's not wearing one. And you'll hear the host here. It's a relatively short piece of audio. He's been caught. The hypocrisy. And he throws his hands up, which you know, you can't hear that, but he's kind of like, well, yeah. and there's this silence there before the gal back at the studio tries to pick things up again. But this is the audio of the exchange.
Al Perry, you were in Lake Geneva, Washington. I've been following Wisconsin. You on Twitter. I've seen you out there today. It seems like you might be one of the only people wearing a mask and practicing social distancing.
I think people felt like the Supreme Court made the decision here in Wisconsin that it was time to open up. But you can see here, just around. Nobody's wearing them. Nobody's
including the cameraman.
There you go, including the cameraman. Yeah. Katie?
Captain Cruz not wearing.
Striking image.
Any of the guys you say half the crew, what did you say something?
No, it's just funny.
Have you seen the video of it?
No.
Because the guy from MSNBC, he throws his, because he realizes, he's embarrassed. Because he realizes that they're being hypocritical. The MSNBC's up there for the point. Now, she says Lake Geneva, Washington. This is Wisconsin. And the whole point they're up there is because you have to be some sort of moron not to wear a mask. You're irresponsible for not wearing a mask. You're part of the problem for not wearing a mask. The only person up there wearing a mask, evidently, from MSNBC is the person that's on camera. And so they try to shame some guy who's walking by, and I'll play it again because he's off camera a little bit, but you could hear the guy on scene there, and he's like, look over here, you know, like this guy, and you can hear him say, like your cameraman, and then you hear him subsequently say, half your crew's not wearing them.
Al Perry, you were in Lake Geneva, Washington. I've been following you on Twitter. I've seen you out there today. It seems like you might be one of the only people wearing a mask and practicing social distancing.
I think people felt like the Supreme Court made the decision here in Wisconsin that it was time to open up. But you can see here, just around. Nobody's wearing them. Nobody's
including the cameraman.
There you go, including the cameraman. Yeah. Katie?
Captain Cruz not wearing.
Striking images.
You're going to hear half your crew's not wearing it. And she's like striking it. It just ignores it. Continues on with the narrative. Now, I mean, seriously. This is how it's one of two things. Either it is the absolute pinnacle of eliteness and hypocrisy, where they don't feel like they really have to do it. Now, he's got to do it for show on camera because that demonstrates how wrong all of these Trump heathens are, because that's what these people are. People that Trump has convinced into, you know, thinking if they spray Lysol down their throat, then they can go out and enjoy themselves. And so in order to demonstrate what backwoods, ignorant, hillbilly, anti-scientist Republicans these people are, he's got to wear a mask to draw the distinction. Yet it doesn't seem to even cross their mind that his camera crews should have to, that any of the people that are working the van there at MSNBC, where they hook everything up, and, you know, those people aren't wearing them. I mean, you hear the guy say, half your crew's not even wearing them. So it's either hypocrisy and elitism, or it is a recognition that they know it's not even that serious. They know it isn't that serious in terms of the need absolutely outdoors to wear a mask at all times. Otherwise, you're going to cause the death. Because if you want to take that narrative, and this is the narrative that MSNBC and so many Democrats are pushing, that you're responsible for killing your grandparents if you do this, then evidently the cameraman from MSNBC is responsible for murdering some elderly people, and the half of the camera crew or the rest of the MSNBC crew that also wasn't wearing masks, they're responsible for death. Of course, that doesn't count. You know, because they're the media. It's probably falls under freedom of the press for them to be able to go around and kill elderly people in nursing homes. Now, illustrate further here the hypocrisy of these people. It's like global climate change. On one hand, they say if you participate in these activities, the world's going to end, but they do it themselves. And Whitmer's come under fire because of something her husband did. I'll fill you in on that. But up in Virginia, Governor Ralph Northam went out. He was at Virginia Beach at taking pictures with people, not social distancing, and he got caught for it, doing the very thing he accuses Americans of being irresponsible in doing, and killing elderly people. Now, he's like, oh, well, I'm sorry. I wasn't prepared. I didn't have a mask. What does that mean? You killed less people? News coming up next.